It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Have you ever tasted a golden oyster mushroom known for their mild, nutty flavor?
They're bright yellow, easy to grow. You might find them at your farmer's market or sprouting from grow kits that allow people to plant them at home.
They have risen in popularity in recent decades, but they're a non-native mushroom that researchers say are a risk to the biodiversity of forests.
UW-Madison researchers have a new report published in the journal Current Biology about how the species is spreading rapidly and encroaching on native mushrooms in the Midwest and harming the health of the ecosystem.
The study found that trees with golden oyster mushrooms growing on them host about half as many types of native fungi compared with trees without golden oyster mushrooms. Lead author Aishwarya Veerabahu is a doctoral student in the UW-Madison Department of Botany. Aishwarya, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
When did golden oyster mushrooms first reach U.S. soil? Can you talk about their origin story here and their journey to us?
Yeah, we don't know exactly when they hit U.S. soil, right? They were cultivated in Asia. They are native to Asia, and so they've already been known as an edible mushroom there and has been cultivated there. And they were brought over to North America. We are guessing sometime between like maybe the 1980s and the 2000s. But the time when like our commercial cultivation of golden oysters really started to take off in North America, I think was somewhere around the 2010s.
Why are they thriving here? What's causing them to just explode?
I think a big part of it is that it's a similar climate and similar like mixed hardwood forests to their native range. But apart from that, we don't really know. It's actually kind of like my next project that I'm working on that will try and get closer to answering that. But it does seem to be really good at growing fast through wood. It seems to be good at creating lots of mushroom bodies in order to create lots of spores, and so very, very good at multiplying in that way. And so far, those are kind of our first guesses, but we don't quite know the answer yet, but I'm excited to figure that question out.
How did you become interested in these mushrooms and, you know, start to conduct your research here in Wisconsin? Walk us through that.
Yeah, well, I was already doing fungal ecology research when I was back out in California. And I was looking to join Dr. Ann Pringle's lab here. And really, she and some of the other scientists in the area had been noticing increased reports of golden oyster mushrooms from community scientists and, you know, citizen scientists.
Citizen scientists. Okay.
Yeah. So really, I think it was that entire body of amazing, curious people out there that saw the mushrooms and started talking about them and noticing, hey, we haven't seen this here before. What are they doing here now? And now they're everywhere. It was really this kind of word of mouth that spread about them. And so my professor kind of like clocked that. They had this project and there was not much else that had been studied about it. The first question that almost anybody wants to know when we talk about an invasive species is what is it doing to the native, organisms, to the native community, and does it have an environmental impact?
Can you talk about that and what effect it's having on biodiversity and why we should care about this biodiversity?
Yeah, fungal biodiversity, I think we should care about purely because it deserves to exist, right? Just the fact that these organisms have been evolving on Earth for millions, billions of years, they deserve to be here, period. Like, biodiversity is always going to be a healthy part of an ecosystem. I think another big reason we should care about it is because, especially in forest ecosystems, fungal biodiversity accounts for a lot of the processes going on there. So that means wood decay, interactions with other forest beings like tree seedlings, small animals, insects, birds, right? All of these things, they depend on dead wood habitats. And so one of the things that we are worried about, yet to study it, but worried about for the future is if we have this invasive fungus that is a wood decay fungus, so it breaks down wood, it grows on dead trees and dead wood, and it seemingly is chewing through them so rapidly and bringing them down, what does that mean for the rate of wood decay, the rate of carbon emissions from that wood decay, and the deadwood habitat that results from it that so much of the rest of forest biodiversity depends on?
I imagine you have been out to a number of forest land in Wisconsin and elsewhere. What do you notice when you get up close to these mushrooms? What do you see?
It is a startling amount of yellow, right? There's just so many clusters of golden oyster mushrooms usually covering a log or a stump that I come across.
Are golden oyster mushrooms as prevalent in other states as they are here in Wisconsin? And what about outside the Midwest?
Yes, it is outside the Midwest, and I think that it is quite prevalent in other states. I see a lot of hot spots in Iowa, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, really kind of just all of the states going across up into the Northeast. And then really around the Hudson Valley as well, which is one of the spots where we see one of the earliest observations of golden oysters growing in the wild.
Are golden oysters as a species comparable to another successful mushroom that has a similar type of story, or are they just unique in what you see among mushrooms?
There are other invasive non-pathogenic fungi. And so what I mean by that is, if you've heard of Amanita phalloides, the death cap, it is invasive right now on the west coast of North America, and I think possibly invasive in other places as well. I know it was introduced to Australia. I don't know if you've been keeping up with a kind of a high-profile murder case that happened recently using the death cap. But so there are other mushrooms that have been successfully invasive that don't necessarily, like, they don't pathogenize any other organism. But in terms of cultivated mushrooms, right, that we eat, it seems to be the first one. And it is kind of unique in that it is the first mushroom that we've seen or that we know of that has escaped cultivation and spread so rapidly.
We're talking about a new report from UW-Madison researchers on the spread of invasive golden oyster mushrooms in Wisconsin and in other states. We have lead researcher for the study, Aishwarya Veerabahu, is a doctoral student in the botany department at UW-Madison. It seems these mushrooms prefer to live in the wood. I think I read of elm and ash trees, and many Wisconsin communities have removed elm trees due to Dutch elm disease, and more recently, the ash trees due to the invasive emerald ash borer. And I'm wondering, are these mushrooms adapting to other trees, are they more prolific among any types of trees? What do you see?
Very unfortunately, it does seem like they are adapting to new tree species. Like, we have found it on cottonwood trees in the arboretum and so many other types. Folks have been telling me reports of seeing it on red oak, on maple. We've seen it on black cherry here as well. So it definitely is growing on other types of wood as well. But in southern Wisconsin, elm definitely is it's the most prevalent tree that we see it on. I'm not quite sure what that story is for the Northeast.
How might this invasive fungus spread differently from an invasive fish or an invasive plant or an invasive beetle, for that matter? Can you talk a little bit about the contrast at all?
Yeah, I would say that it has multiple potential modes of spreading. We haven't quite looked into that yet, but some of my co-authors at the Forest Service, they have an ongoing project trying to look at how it might be spreading, at least here in Wisconsin. They do release billions of spores. It almost looks like this smoky white haze drifting from the mushroom.
Wow.
If you come upon it when it's fresh. And so they can spread by spores that are carried along wind currents, but those spores can also land on insects and birds, perhaps, and get around that way. And then insects, birds, you know, pretty much any other creature can also carry the mycelium, like a little bite of the mushroom body, either in the wood or the actual mushroom body, can carry it to a different tree, and then it can get a foothold there. So any part of the fungal body, either the mushroom or the mycelium, can be a little propagule for it to spread elsewhere.
That's in forest land. Can you talk about how it has escaped captivity in commercial production and in these grow kits, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, we don't know exactly, and this is something, unfortunately, we'll never get a real answer for, whether it came from, let's say, like commercial farms just going through their normal processes of, let's say, like venting their facilities, you know, and allowing the spores from their air to get out of their facility, or from spawn, you know, like spent substrate that the mushroom grows on, like getting rid of those, let's say, like around their facility, or whether it's from grow kits. I suspect that it's maybe a combination of multiple of these things, or multiple of these sources. And the grow kits, I think, are particularly... I'm particularly worried about the grow kits just because they are a perfect package for the mushroom to be transported across the country. They could really be, you know, bought and shipped internationally and introduced to a new area with everything that it needs to possibly spread and take hold in the new place.
Have you heard of any developments in the culinary scene, like in the culinary world, whether, you know, restaurants are using these mushrooms or taking the chefs taking them off the menu? Have you heard of any developments there?
I have not. I have contacted actually one chef. I believe his name is Adam Burgo. He has a good blog online about golden oyster mushrooms. I honestly don't feel any sort of way about chefs necessarily. I hope that people don't stop cooking with them, you know? It's not that we can eat our way out of this problem, but it also does not need to be a case where we completely take it out of circulation.
Have you cooked with these mushrooms?
I have. I usually kind of fry them up in a little bit of oil and garlic, and I put them in tacos.
It must feel very conflicting in some respects, because you know what they're doing in the forest land, and yet they're tasty, they're nutritious, they have all these other things going for them.
I feel maybe conflicted most about the human component of the situation. You know, like, I feel completely neutral towards golden oysters themselves, and I think I hope everybody else is able to kind of like hold their multiplicity. Yes, they're an invasive organism, but they're also delicious. They're also nutritious, you know. They're also beautiful and charismatic, and maybe have helped people get interested in mushrooms and mycology. So, I don't feel too conflicted about eating them, that's for sure.
What role can foragers and, you know, amateur mycologists have in helping either monitor the situation or help to maybe control the spread of golden oyster mushrooms? What would you say?
They absolutely can help monitor the spread, and I think they already have been. This project would not exist without community scientists and them posting their observations on online biodiversity databases like iNaturalist and Mushroom Observer. I'm so grateful for that. I have already messaged quite a lot of people on there, so I hope one of your listeners has gotten a little iNaturalist message from me.
What information are you seeking? What are you asking in those moments?
Yeah, really just taking a picture of the golden oyster and uploading the data of where it was found. That location data is really the most important thing. It really helps me track where that invasion front is.
Are there hot spots in Wisconsin that you're noticing?
I think Madison, really just this like southern half of Wisconsin, is the biggest hotspot that I see on the maps.
And as you map this data, what does that help you do with the research? Where does that take you?
Really, it helps me kind of ask what kind of conditions and climates is it getting used to, you know? Like, most recently, someone told me that they saw golden oysters in New Orleans. That's crazy far south, you know? There are observations of them in San Antonio, Texas, in the Upper Peninsula, you know, like, spanning a really, really wide latitude range. And so it kind of helps me ask the questions of, what climates is it getting used to? What tree species is it adapting to? And where might it go next?
Wow. That temperature range in and of itself of what you said, that's very wild.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. You did also ask me, you know, is there anything that foragers can do to try and, you know, help reduce the spread? The really tough thing is, like, it's not like other invasive species, you know, you were mentioning earlier. It's not like invasive fish where the unit of the fish, right, the fish's body is where it starts and ends, but that's not what it is for a fungus. For a fungus, its mycelium is throughout the wood, possibly in the soil, and so there kind of is no extracting it from the environment once it's in a place. But I do want to tell folks that if they think that they're in an area where they are possibly spotting golden oysters for the first time, like, let's say, really northern or really southern ranges, let's say, like New Orleans or Canada, those are places where it hasn't totally spread yet. And if I found it there, I would try and either contact, like, a local official who has authority over removing that wood, or if it was like on their property, I would try and remove that wood and burn it. There's no guarantee that that would get it out of the place, but it's at least an attempt.
What's the next step in the research? Where does it go from here?
I'm really excited about what I'm working on right now. I'm doing a population genomic study. And so what that looks like is I'm asking folks all over North America to send me samples of golden oyster mushrooms in the mail. We've already gotten many. Sometimes they're very stinky, and my lab mates are like, you need to get a hold of this. And then I will also be getting samples of golden oysters from the native range in Asia and trying to compare their genetics and see, is there something different in them on the genetic level that is allowing them to be such a successful invasive species here.
Aishwarya, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your interest in our work.
Aishwarya Veerabahu is a doctoral student in UW-Madison's Botany Department. She is lead author of this report published recently in the journal Current Biology about how invasive golden oyster mushrooms are pushing out native fungi and how it's causing environmental harm in forests.